WNST, Towson, Baltimore, and Baltimore Positive. And yes, we're still broadcasting in very, very powerful mono AM 1570 in Towson, Maryland. I love having a guest on that write books and write books about stuff that are insider, and especially an insider who was in a world that I was very much inside of. I have said it's the best book ever written on football. He has topped that somehow with a New York Times bestseller. Thank you for your servitude. I don't track him down much. He lives down the road. At some point, I'll actually meet him and be a fanboy and have a crab cake and a beer and BS about things. Mark Leibovich joins us right now to not talk Patriots or Ravens or press credentials or any of that stuff. But, dude, congratulations on another just incredible book from insider access that's almost like real-life Borat. I mean, I mean that in the highest praise. Real-life
Borat, did you say?
Real life, getting behind the scenes.
Oh, I love it.
Yeah, and like real-life Borat. I would say you are America's bullshit exterminator. That's that's what I would call you, Mark Lee.
I like it. I'm putting that on the paperback little subject line there. That's perfect. Well, Nestor, it's good to be with you. Thank you for having me. It's always good to be on. And, you know, I'm sorry you're not being treated in the manner in which you are deserving by the hometown team, but we don't have to get into that.
Yeah, I mean, that's my story to tell later. That's over a beer and a crab cake somewhere in Howard County in the winter. Right. For your book and for where the state of the world is, every single day, the stories you tell in your book sort of affect the electorate as we get up on an election that, I mean, I've driven all over the state of Maryland. I'm astonished pulling into convenience stores in Western Maryland where everything is a gun and an F Biden. And like, it's an amazing time. We've come a long way since this town, right?
Yeah, this town, I mean, in retrospect was, I mean, that was the first book I did on Washington, and it just seemed, I mean, it was seen as a takedown when it came out 10 years ago, but that was for much lower stakes. I mean, now the country is, I mean, you know, people talk about civil war and threats to democracy, and I don't think it's necessarily overheated or anything. No, there's a lot of twisted stuff out there, and, you know, this book I wrote was basically, it took aim at, you know, I think one of our two major parties, which has been complicit in a lot of this and has really sort of put our way of life into to some jeopardy. So now these are scary times, but you can always be scary. You can always try to be at least get some laughs and try to at least exhaust the subjects that are deserving of scorn and ridicule with scorn and ridicule. So, you know, like the NFL, Washington's a swamp, right? And you sort of try to get inside and, you know, hey, I'm all for bullshit extermination because there's, God knows, there's plenty of it in a lot of the worlds we travel in.
I think the amazing part is the ability for you to have a Lindsey Graham or even in your football book, a Jerry Jones. And you know, I consider myself a reporter and a journalist, which is probably why I've been thrown out by both franchises here at this point, because they fear me. I, you know, for whatever reason, I'm not safe because I would have the audacity to tell the truth. Amazing, right? Yeah. But these guys tell you the truth and realizing that, and I always see that old David Bowie video about the internet and how it's going to change the paradigm and, you know, all that. The last 20 years in information and silos and, you know, the voter or Lindsey Graham's not reading your book or watching this hit or any of that. And that's really an issue when you go to these places and find out how little information there is. I mean, I had places with Anderson Cooper, CNN sucks things on that you could not get cell service in the parking lot. So I'm thinking to myself, you have no access to the outside world. So the internet gives and it takes away, but it really has been the organizer for whatever the chaos is, I think.
Yeah, no, it's true. I mean, what's interesting about like social media and the internet is it's kind of democratized everything. It's made I mean, anyone can weigh in. Everyone from the peanut gallery all of a sudden has like their own little media company, right? And everyone, there's no barrier to entry. However, kind of, what's the word? Kind of counterintuitively, it also kind of makes for a smaller world. It makes you kind of, you can choose your own silos, right? And you choose your own little, you know, neighborhoods and cul-de-sacs. And you only sort of stick to people who agree with you and who care about the same things as you. And, you know, it kind of narrows our vision instead of expanding it in some ways, at least in some ways. So, no, I don't know. It's really, but people are really dug in. People are really kind of circling the wagons. And I think, you know, just like sports, like politics, everyone sort of chooses their tribe these days. And I think the internet and social media exacerbate that.
Mark Leibovich is our guest. It's always a pleasure to have him on from the capital of the free world, just 38 miles to the south. So I read your book, The Big Game Came to Me. Obviously, I know of your work and your writing. The football book comes to me, really touched me because I was at all of those owners meetings and all of those draft things in Indiana, all the places you were, we were in the same room. And and you're just taking notes, and a year and a half later, I'm reading about it. But I was pissing myself laughing. I remember reading the book in various places. I was chasing Springsteen around one year reading your book. And my wife kept saying, you're laughing so much. I've never seen you stare at a book and laugh. And I think to myself, awesome, are you a comedian? I mean, like, there's a part of this where you say you take a lighter touch. Man, it's hard to have a lighter touch on Lindsey Graham and Marco Rubio when it is so obviously performative and it's easy to poke fun at it. I mean, Bill Maher's been doing it for 20 years, right?
Yeah. I mean, look, I think it's great to make people laugh. I don't think I'm a comedian. I mean, I try not to be a comedian because I think, you know, this stuff is serious. It's for keeps. It's about the country. It's about democracy. It's about people's lives. And, you know, I try never to lose touch with that. I mean, this is serious stuff. And, you know, there are good guys and bad guys, mostly bad guys in at least the most recent book. And, you know, football at the end of the day is a game, right? I mean, it's big business. If you play the game, you're putting your life at risk, or you're putting your health at risk, your long-term health at risk, certainly. So you take that seriously. But, you know, look, these are circuses. Like, life is filled with circuses, and you got to sort of separate the spectacle, the humor, from, you know, the substance, but also being aware that it is all happening at once in some ways. So I don't know. I try to at some point on some level have fun, because otherwise I would just like put my head in the oven.
Thank you for your servitude is the book. It's a New York Times bestseller. Please go check it out. You can follow Mark obviously out on social media and his work at the New York Times. And I don't know what your next book is, or if you're allowed to tell me.
I hope it's not
on Washed Up Sports Radio, guys. You know, I'm in on it at this point. But the concept of the book, right? Like, Big Game, you and I discussed this, and I tell the story about the Tom Brady thing in San Francisco and whatever, and you sort of fell into Access and thinking that there was some sort of behind the curtain of how these people act. And 5 years later on, if we pull back Daniel Snyder and just down the list of the Deshaun Watts, just the filth of the NFL, right? And even on my own personal level, maybe there'll be my own Big Game at some point.
But write it, man.
But well, thank you, and I.
You totally should.
I shall. Read my first 20,000 words on the press credential being taken away, and then you decide if I'm a writer. I know it needs to be better edited. But your book and the notion that this is going to be the topic that you're going to take Trump enablers and say. Which is the most amazing thing to me, because like Trump's up moving storms into Alabama, he's injecting bleach, he's selling off Greenland. I mean, shit that your grandfather, if he were back, you'd have to explain to him after a couple of world wars and Hitler and like just all of it. Like, are you kidding me? I mean, there was a point, dude, that dude sat there for 4 years having press conferences that just blew my mind. I paced the floor in downtown Baltimore saying, are we going to survive this level of malfeasance, ignorance on the take, hotel down the street, milk in the south, like all of this. And I'm like, damn, if Leibovich would just get in there, maybe one day we'd have something here. And you've gone in and sat at the hotel bar for a little while.
I did. Real hard work, right? No, I mean, what I wanted to do here is I didn't want to try to like write the next, you know, big Trump opus, right? The book that understands or psychoanalyzes Donald Trump any better than the next guy.
Well, Woodward did that, right?
I don't know. Yeah, I don't know. I mean, I don't think there's a hell of a lot there, to be honest with you. I mean, I just don't care that much. And you know, there's so much White House intrigue that we've been reading about or not reading about and tuned out about. I wanted to focus on, you know, first of all, the people who made him possible. I think the Republican Party gets off a little bit easy because they could have stopped him at any time. And privately, and this is all in the book, they talk about what kind of a dumbass he is and how dangerous he is and how scary he is. But he's the president of the United States, and he's the most popular person in their party, and he can make or break their career. So they kind of kiss his ass. So the Trump Hotel Bar, which is like the capital of Washington for 4 years during the Trump years. I mean, he's got this private business. This is beautiful ballroom at this new hotel that he opens up. It's not his anymore. He sold it to the Waldorf. But this was where the whole White House staff and the government kind of hung out after hours. And they sort of were buying each other meals and greasing each other's palms. And lobbyists were there. Trump himself, like he went to one restaurant for 4 years outside of the White House. And that was the steakhouse at the Trump Hotel. So he'd peacock in. And it'd be this spectacle. He'd wanted this big applauded entry from all the MAGA heads who were in town. And it was just really quite a scene. And, you know, we'd always order the same thing. You'd get a 40-ounce tomahawk steak, shrimp cocktail, French fries, chocolate cake for dessert, and always a little bucket of chilled Diet Coke. Because, you know, the diet, right? Got to watch the waistline. So he, but yeah, it was quite a spectacle. And that was, I think, a good place to sort of watch this circus play out for 4 years. And look, if you're a reporter and you can get paid to drink on the job, why not, right?
Mark, could I have just gone down there and sat at the bar with you on any of these given nights? I mean, I had looked at it and thought of, dude, I was so, I mean, it was 4 years just living through it. And then the plague came. You know, my wife had just had cancer twice before the, like all of this mess. But I thought to myself, this stench is happening. It was in front of everyone, right? Like it was out there every day. He was selling off the hotel and he had like, it was just all BS, right? Yeah. It was very obvious what was happening, but I thought that's got to be like a Hollywood. They're only letting in Republican, you know, like how did you wind up in there and how often did you go? Because I mean, that's a brilliant just idea to be a fly on the wall there any day. I would have done it for entertainment and vomit purposes before, like, I don't know, a Styx concert at the Warner Theater or something. You know what I mean?
Yeah, there was plenty of vomit. I mean, not literally, but figurative vomit on my part. I mean, just to be clear, this is not the place I would choose to hang out if, you know, if I weren't working or looking to write a book. I mean, but yeah, I mean, it's a public place. You can just walk in, go to a bar. I mean, they would kick a lot of people out after a while because it's a private business. And like, you know, if they sort of recognize reporters, I mean, put it this way. I mean, I was lucky not to be kicked out. There were a lot of my colleagues who were clearly casing the joint, you know, for journalistic purposes, perfectly legitimate First Amendment reasons were not permitted entry. But no, yeah, you could have gone in. I mean, sure. I mean, it's also, you know, it's overpriced, but it's a nice place to get a drink and, you know, good food and everything.
Well, how often were you? I mean,
once a week or so, maybe once every couple of weeks.
Okay, for 4 years.
Not that often. For 4 years, yeah. But, it adds up. You can fill a bunch of notebooks. You can, you know, I did a lot of my interviews there. Like, I would meet so-and-so for breakfast or drinks or something after work. And there was always a bunch of reporters there. I mean, it was, in a weird way, it was kind of like a Cheers during the Trump years. Instead of Sam and Norm, like, joking about Norm's tab, you'd have, like, some Saudi lobbyist and a White House person joking about how many tens of thousands or hundreds of thousands of dollars he should pay the Trump organization to get a meeting at the White House or something. So, you know, it was definitely corrupt, but I mean, it was all happening largely out in the open, surprisingly out in the open.
Well, yeah, I mean, it was out in the open for just a kid in Baltimore following along on Twitter in the middle of a plague as to how this was going down. Mark Leibovich is here. The book is Thank You for Your Servitude, All Things the Servitude of the 4 years of the Trump administration on the Republican side. A little football and a little just channel football. The after effects of big game. It's now been 5-6 years since you wrote the book, where the league is, big picture. Just are you still watching the Patriots? I mean, are you into the game?
Yeah, I am. I watch, you know, I've been less engaged the last couple of years, partly because I wasn't writing a book anymore, so I didn't really have to care. I grew up a Pats fan. I grew up there, so it's sort of a disease. They're not a very interesting team these days. They're not a very good team. Brady left. The pandemic year was rough. I hated those crowd-free games. I mean, that was, in retrospect, kind of eerie.
I went to one of those, dude. I went to several, actually, but I flew to Houston week two empty blimp. There are 38 people. Yeah. I'm wearing a mask. There's six reporters in the press box. It was spooky weird.
So weird. Yeah, I didn't. I mean, it was terrible on TV. I mean, you realize how much you need that atmosphere, even when you're sitting at home. But that happened to coincide with like the Cam Newton year for my team. And look, it's just it hasn't been. But having said that, you know, football's still king. I mean, people just and they continue to like be a very poorly run organization. And Roger Goodell is, you know, I don't think a great commissioner. And you got Deshaun Watson, as you mentioned. You got, you know, these health and safety. I mean, it's a corrupt organization. However, the game is just amazing. It's like heroin. It's like America is just addicted to football. And, you know, unfortunately, I'm one of the junkies. And, you know, I haven't stopped watching.
God, I don't have you on much. And you just leave me a nugget like they're a corrupt organization. And I'm
They are. It's like,
that's not said much on ESPN or on NFL Network and it's not said much in the Washington Post or the New York Times, other than when they're on trial for something and doing something to screw over cheerleaders, literally and figuratively, and just, you know, employing Deshaun Watson to the tune of $231 million, which has greatly affected my football team's ability to sign its football quarterback. How it's affected the business. But they don't care. They don't care about it.
No, they don't care. They're going to be fine. Everyone. I mean, look, they're billionaires. Billionaires are not like you and me. I mean, I'm assuming you're not a billionaire. I'm not a billionaire. Maybe I'm wrong. Maybe, you know, I could be wrong. But it's an oligarchy, right? I mean, these guys are not, you know, they protect each other. It's a protection racket. The fact that Dan Snyder is still, you know, still has the controls the Washington team is just stunning to me. But it really isn't, because, you know, he probably is threatening to sue, and he probably knows a ton of secrets that other owners have that he's going to threaten to expose. And so he's probably safe for now. But that's the way the business operates. And again,
extortion in the middle, huh? Like, you know, hey, if you don't do this, you got to, you know, like, hey, I know things. I got John Gruden's emails.
Exactly.
Bob Kraft, I know where he got massages. That's where they are at this point, right? When they're moving franchises and screwing St. Louis, and you know who's ever going to be a Chargers fan, right?
It's true. I would actually become a Chargers fan if they moved back to San Diego. I mean, I liked the San Diego Chargers. That's a good little football town, and of course, you know, they got screwed because the Spanos family made more money in L.A. and now they're the L.A. Chargers, and no one goes to watch them except if they're watching the opposing team. So.
Hey, dude, I walked off the set because I collect belt buckles, and this is my childhood belt buckle. I'm keenly aware of the pain and the physical, seeing my father cry twice in his life, and once was the day of the. But I've given up the Ursay thing. You know, if Eddie Vedder can look nicely upon Oklahoma City after the Sonics thing, I can make nice with Jim Ursay. Jim Ursay's doing nice things for mental health awareness and putting on good concerts with the guys from REM.
He's not Tiger. He was the son. He wasn't, you know, he wasn't there. I will tell you this, though. This was tacky. I think this is in big game. When you go to a game in Indianapolis, they have like a little kind of hype video at the beginning. And, you know, they have highlights of like Peyton Manning, you know, great moments in Indianapolis Colts history. But the first scene in that hype video is the Mayflower trucks leaving Baltimore in the middle of the night. And I called bullshit on that in the book. I mean, like, can you imagine? Like, they shouldn't be boasting about that. It shouldn't be a part of their story that they're celebrating. They should feel great shame over that. They should be apologizing every which way. And I thought that was just weird. So anyway, other than that, Jim Irsay, you know, he's not his father, so good for him.
I've told the story back at the owners' meetings at the Biltmore about 15 years ago, right after 06 when they won the Super Bowl. Indy had finally, they were clean, they had their parade and all that. Steve Bisciotti and I and Jim Irsay went for an hour-long walk off the Biltmore at the owners' meetings discussing the records of the Baltimore Colts, because Steve was trying to make the fans happy. He had just bought the team, and the fans here were really pissed going to Canton and seeing Johnny U in Indianapolis and saying, why wouldn't you just sort of swap things out, start things over? Right. And you know what Jim said? And you know how Jim's like sort of all that sort of, you know, touchy-feely. Jim's like, I can't deny the history. The history is that we moved the team. Like, and
All right, good.
You know, like, I can't deny what really happened. So that would be his answer to that. And I don't know that I appreciate that or don't appreciate, but it is the truth. I mean, if you're grounded in reality, that's at least a start, yeah. Right?
Yeah, I would, if I were the league, first of all, I would give Baltimore the Colts. Like, I mean, just make change their name to the Colts. Like, you know, just change Raven to Colts. I mean, same franchise, same owner, same stadium. And make the Indianapolis team the Ravens. Now, I get the Edgar Allan Poe thing that's got its own. Or, you know, give them a different name. But the Baltimore Colts, like the Cleveland Browns, should still exist. Hey, I got to run, man.
See you, man. Appreciate you. Mark Leibovich, go buy the book. Thank you for your servitude. And buy Big Game 2 with paperback, wherever the hell it is. It's the best book on football ever written. Appreciate you, man. Mark's out. I'm in. We are WNST, AM 1570, Towson, Baltimore. And we never stop talking Baltimore positive.